So lecture 8, February 9th, 2023, lecture notes page 80, and I'm glad you're all in here today because it's so gorgeous outside, right? Except maybe you get blown away by the wind, but other than that, it's pretty nice outside. If you are interested in learning about sales and marketing as a career or networking with companies because you might want a job one day, they're doing a prep session in the College of Business for the Sales and Marketing Career Fair, which is February 21st, and if you want to register for the session, you can use that QR code. When I've gone to these career fairs, I'm amazed by the number of interesting companies with interesting positions that they have at these things, if you've been to them or not. Also, if you happen to be an accounting type, then there's an accounting meet and greet Thursday, February 16th, 10 to noon in the Student Center. There's a registration QR code for that if that describes you. So we know that mini test 4 will open tomorrow at 8 a.m., closing the following Tuesday, and it covers lectures 7, 8. That's this week's lectures. And you can see I'm giving you a heads up, which has actually always been on the screen. Midterm 1, 17% of your class grade, will open in a couple Wednesdays on the 22nd and run for a week into March, covering lectures 1 through 10. So if you're getting ready to study for stuff, that would be something to study for. Tonight, the first of the Enhanced Learning Extra Credits and Packbacks closes, 11:59 p.m., and the next one, the second, will open on the regular schedule tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. So marketing in the news. I love it when things come across my desk just as we're discussing them in class. This is a research study for practitioners, for business people, into understanding consumer behavior. It's great. Young consumers blame social media for irresponsible shopping habits. New data, well, consumer behavior data finds generational differences in marketing tactics and success rates. New data found in a consumer behavior survey conducted by a company called Clever for Real Estate, which finds millennials and Gen Z shoppers are extremely susceptible to social media marketing practices, with more than 80% of these shoppers admitting they made a purchase after seeing an ad on a social media platform. That describe any of you? Any of you seen it on a platform and then buy it? Or is that no one? Just uno? Webbies? How about you? You're digital people? Two of you. So we're seeing research to understand consumer decision-making, generational differences in consumer behavior, social media and marketing, and its importance. The company survey, which aimed to discover today's shopping habits and attitudes towards marketing across all generations, found that when it comes to targeting millennial and Gen Z shoppers, TikTok stars, YouTube streamers, and Instagram influencers are extremely effective vehicles for advertising, driving millions of young consumers to make impulse purchases at 4 times the rate of baby boomers. So again, the importance of social influence, the idea of impulse versus planned purchases, generational differences in decision-making. I just asked you your first name, and I lost your first name already.
Anthony.
So last time we were talking to Anthony, and he brought up an interesting question. As we were looking at our model of consumer decision-making, and we were thinking about evoked sets and known sets and unknown sets, about the issue of these folks that are sort of online, they go on looking for a flashlight, they don't have any brand in mind, and they make a choice. This begins to have us think about what that means, and we'll return to that topic when we actually get into the lecture. But this ties into that notion of how's what you're talking about describe what consumers are doing. So we'll talk about that in a minute. Among leading marketing trends on social media, Clever's report shows that video ads perform extremely well with Gen Zs and millennials on social media. The researchers of the report draw an important distinction here between TV ads and video ads on social media, finding that while Americans as a whole claim TV ads are the most influential in their decision-making process, data shows that social media advertising is more influential in driving people to make purchases as compared to TV advertising. So understanding what influences your target market. So adding video elements is a very effective tactic for advertisers targeting Gen Z and millennials. Video ads that Americans find funny, humorous, are consumers' top choice because, in part, they find them to be more memorable. Information ads, informative ads, were close behind, but the first choice for marketers would be funny ads, so ad tactics. The data shows millennials are the generation most likely to watch Super Bowl for the commercials, with 33% saying that that's what they do. Overall, about 41% of Americans say they're more likely to buy a product advertised during the Super Bowl. So consumer behavior and maybe a justification for spending how much money on a 30-second ad? $6 million on a 30-second ad? Because I guess a bunch of consumers are influenced to buy the product. Why infuriating your customers may not be a great business strategy. Did you have to come to this class to know that infuriating your customers may not be a great strategy? This is real stuff in the press directed to practitioners today. Online brand value is built through experience, not just, quote, exposure. This is excellent advice given by usability legend Jacob Nielsen, and it does not seem to be heeded by an awful lot of online digital marketers. So here's the importance of customer satisfaction. A new study from another research company, Yext, finds 47% of leads in a Yext survey, that is to say people who are prospects for a purchase, said they were unable to make an online purchase because the website's help section didn't give them the information they needed. I'd say, ouch, you aren't giving the people the information they need to make a purchase off your website? What are you doing there? Have you ever had that happen where you go on and you can't really figure it out? What are they thinking? Take the class. Yes, ma'am.
Called Nielsen, where they track what we watch.
Now that I don't think I don't. I think that's a coincidence of name, but you're going to be perfect for two chapters. Exactly right. We're going to ask that question. That's great. No, I like it. Nobody ever knows what I'm talking about. I think that's a coincidence of his last name. But the Nielsen study is really interesting ways to gather information. So respondents said it takes nearly 9 hours for a typical customer service issue to be resolved. Where respondents say it should take about 14, 15 minutes. How many guys have gotten on a help desk and they start with the most basic question possible, like, are you alive? Okay. Are you on a computer? Yes, that's how I'm talking to you, et cetera. What are you doing? Not good. 42% of respondents said online help sites do not often provide the answers that they look for on their first search. The biggest challenge, the biggest one of all, cited by 61%, is that the help site doesn't understand their question. Not good. So we're seeing marketing research at work. We're seeing a lack of consumer satisfaction. This isn't rocket science. If you aggravate your consumers and prospects, they will go find one of your competitors that doesn't do that. And they're not going to come back to you. Competition is willing to satisfy your customers better than you are, and off they go. Sadly, 80% of companies in surveys believe they are delivering a superior service to their customers, yet only 8% of customers believe they are receiving excellent service. There's a little gap there. Go do some research. Go talk to your customers. Go find out what's wrong. The importance of understanding your consumers. If you don't listen to your consumers, the price you're paying is huge. Another study about customer service found that 66% of Americans are likely to abandon a brand after a poor customer service experience. Yet companies, interestingly, often put a reduction in customer service at the top of their cost-cutting list. Let's see, we've got to cut some money. Let's cut out the customer service people. What? This is probably not a great move. 49% of customers prefer talking to a live agent by phone. 45% would choose online chat with a live agent if it was available. Understanding consumers' needs, wants, and desires seems like it would be an important thing to do. Yeah? All right. So we pick up lecture notes, page 80, page 127 in the textbook. Continue with chapter 5, Understanding Consumer Behavior. So when we left off, we were thinking about this idea of the purchase decision process, and what I began to walk through was the notion of how we picture people thinking about this idea of all brands, known brands and unknown brands, and that's where we began to chat about folks who go online. This motto in general reflects on people who are going through a thoughtful evaluation of an important decision to them. And so it doesn't work so well if you're talking about somebody just wants a flashlight, they jump online, oh, there's a flashlight recommended by my favorite site, and boom. that's not quite, but it's almost an impulse decision. They still have a motive, they still have a drive, they still have an influence, but it's not like, oh, let me evaluate these brands once again another. So it's closer to an impulse than to a, I'll use the word rational decision-making process or thoughtful decision-making process. This doesn't describe that so well. It describes the more thoughtful process. You're exactly right. Doesn't apply very well here. So anyhow, known brands versus unknown brands. Do we buy unknown brands? Well, I guess in an impulsive way you might, but not in a thoughtful way. And you certainly can't buy brands you aren't aware of at all. I don't know what's even there. It's not even on the list of flashlights. Can't buy it. It's not there. Then, out of the known brands, we have the acceptable brands, those brands we might consider buying, those that we would not buy. They're just unacceptable. We're not doing that. And then, interestingly, there's a group of overlooked brands, brands you might consider if you just remembered them, but you don't. And that's, of course, a problem that V8 often plays with. Could have had a V8.
Look what mommy's having. Mommy's having a french fry. Yes, she is. Yes, she is.
Could have had a V8. 100% vegetable juice. With 3 of your daily vegetable servings in every little bottle.
So you're going off, you're choosing something to have, and you just forget about having V8, right? So that's the reminder of that. Of the acceptable brands, the brands in your evoke set, then there is some brand that is purchased, and all the other brands are, for now, rejected. This would be important stuff for you to know about the people that are in the market for your product, for your brand. Where do you sit here? If they buy you, why? If they reject you, why? So it's a way of thinking about the consumer process once they begin to get to that alternative evaluation stage. Yeah? As consumers go through the process of thinking about those brands, evaluating those brands, they form beliefs about the brand, which may or may not be true, but these are the beliefs they have. And then based on those beliefs, they begin to form attitudes, favorable or unfavorable, about the brand. And the result of this then is a purchase intention, including which brand to buy, where to buy, when to buy, how to pay. People do not always act, even after consideration, on their intention to purchase, which is often important for us to know in marketing. Who's old enough to drink a beer? Who has a favorite brand of beer? No one has a favorite brand. Okay, what's your favorite brand of beer?
Sam Adams.
Okay. So I'm going to do a research study on consumers, and I see you coming into the local Acme, and I say, how you doing? Are you old enough to buy beer? You say, yes. I say, are you planning to buy beer today? You say, yes. I say, what are you planning to buy? And you say, Sam Adams, if you have the money. So I check off the list, and I've got some research down here. I find a consumer. He's got a purchase intention. He's going to buy some Sam Adams beer. He comes out of the store, and I say, hey, can I stop you? Yeah. Did you buy some beer today? Yeah. What'd you buy? And you say, Budweiser. What the? Is he irrational? Is he crazy? What's going on here? Why might you not have bought the Sam Adams? One reason you just mentioned. I realized it was too expensive, and by the way, Bud was on sale. I bumped into a buddy of mine in the store. He really likes Budweiser. What the heck? I'm being sociable. I got a Budweiser. They were out of stock, which happens, of Sam Adams. I got the next beer in line. I got Budweiser. So even when consumers thoughtfully consider what they want to do, evaluate the alternatives, and plan to do something, they don't always. Could he have then, in my silly example, could he have chosen to wait and go down the street to the Drug Mart and bought Sam Adams? So another question is, if something interrupts your intention, are you so brand loyal that you're willing to go somewhere else and get it? Interesting questions if you're a marketer that you should understand, yeah? So once you act on the behavioral intention, we actually get you going. We want to know who made the purchase, where did they buy it, when did they buy it, how did they pay for it? These all might be things that could be important to our marketing campaign, to our communication about our brand with that customer, right? So here we are at the stage of buying value, choosing a brand. And it's important that we understand how our consumer gets there. Must be a lot of white space there. I see a lot of pens moving. So then we buy the product. We make the choice. And then there is what we refer to as the outcomes of choice. Marketers who say we're done once the sale is made are missing some important stuff, like how did it turn out for the consumer? And what I say is there is some level of satisfaction on the one hand, satisfied, dissatisfied, some level of satisfaction, and always a bit of dissonance, which we'll talk about in just a second. So consumers make the purchase or choice based on what? Well, unless it's pretty much impulse, based on their evaluations of the various choices out there, what I think about, and based on their purchase intentions. Then they evaluate whether their choice did what. Well, remember what started this whole thing. We had an unresolved problem, a need. I miss lunch. I want to be unhungry. I need a new shirt. I need a new blouse. There's a problem I'm trying to solve. How well does this do what I needed to do? I needed a flashlight. How well is this one work that I got off the thing? So consumer satisfaction is an interesting situation, an interesting problem for us to think about. You'd think it'd be simple, but nothing's simple. So let's think about this little scenario. I'm told it's a true story. Even if it isn't, I'm going to tell it like it's a true story. Don't tell them. So we have a manufacturer of blueberry muffin mix. Blueberry muffin mix? Anybody ever still bake at home? Make a muffin mix or something like that? Okay, you know what I'm talking about, sort of. Blueberry muffin mix. And they decide to come up with an improved product. They do a bunch of lab tests. They run a bunch of things. They come up with a new product that uses fresh-picked Michigan blueberries. In their target audience, this is a big deal. Michigan blueberries are a big thing. They do blind taste tests where the people don't know what they're tasting. They have them test the competition made blueberry muffins. They have them taste their existing made blueberry muffins. They have them taste the new made blueberry muffins. Consumers prefer the new mix. Marketers look like they're doing pretty good. They create an advertising campaign. The product's easy to make, as the other one was, priced about the same, runs these ads about the delicious, fresh-picked blueberry muffins that's going to be in this muffin mix. So run an outstanding campaign. People buy the product and then don't go back and buy it again. What? What? Apparently, they're not satisfied. I don't think you're going to guess this unless you've been in the class before, but give me some reason why you think people, given what I described, might not go back and buy it again. Yeah. Bad reviews. Even though in testing, everybody thought it was really good, maybe somehow they're getting bad reviews. Good idea? Wasn't the case. Well, actually, it could have been the case. You'll see what I mean in a minute. Yeah. Bad production, right? Another good possibility. What turns out in this little example, is, and I'm told it's true, is that people said it was good, it was fine, but it wasn't as good as you made it look in your commercials. The people in the commercials made it look so great that by the time I tried it, it wasn't as good. You ever go to a movie or read a book that somebody really highly, or a restaurant, someone really highly recommend? They're insane for it. And you go, and it just doesn't reach the expectations they set for you. Marketers run into this exact problem because customer satisfaction is a function of the consumer's expectations about the product and their perception, magic word here, perception of the product's performance. In general, not always, but in general, who sets the expectation for how the product will perform? Who? One more time. I just can't hear you, that's all. No, consumers don't set the expectations for how they'll perform. That's who has the expectations. So who creates the expectations? Thank you. The marketers are the people that are going to create those expectations that those consumers have. So now, the other important part of the sentence is, it doesn't matter objectively how good the bad or how good the thing is. In blind test taste, this muffin won. But because the expectations were set so high in this example, consumers' perceptions of the product were that it weren't as good as they expected. That's a big deal for the marketer. Consumers don't go back. So if perceived performance is below expectations, well, consumers are dissatisfied. Regardless of how good or bad the thing actually is, consumers are unhappy because it doesn't meet their expectations. If product perceived performance equals expectations, well, consumers are satisfied. Yeah, this did what I thought it would do. This did what I wanted. And in that magic case where you can find a situation where perceived performance is greater than expectations, consumers are delighted. And what I'm showing you here is the J.D. Powers Consumer Satisfaction Awards. Now, this idea, I think we touched on this one time before, this idea of expectations is important to satisfaction. And I think our example that I probably used before was you go to a premier steakhouse and you get a chunk of steak, it better be pretty good. You go to Long John Silver's Steakhouse, that's not a thing, but my point is, you know, a steakhouse somewhere, a steak that isn't that good is still okay. Your expectations aren't set as high. You're satisfied in both cases by very different steaks because your expectations are different. So marketers need to recognize this and then be sure that they are only promising what they can deliver. When you puff your product too big, too high, too much, consumers expect too much out of it. They're not going to be satisfied with what you're able to provide them. They don't come back. Now, some marketers will find a way to, quote, understate product performance a little bit. And then when the consumer tries it, they're really delighted. Wow, this is better than I expected, yeah? But, of course, you can't underplay it too much because then they won't buy it at all. So it's a little fine line to walk. The reverse of this is, you ever go get your car fixed and they give you an estimate for the car? And I don't know about the legal aspects of it, but you ever come back and it's lower than the estimate? They did better than the estimate was? If that's ever happened, you're pretty happy. Again, ignoring the legal matter, what if you come back and it's higher than the estimate? You're dissatisfied. So they set your expectations and then they reverse meet them. It's lower than you expected. You're delighted. You're happy. Great. It's sort of that equivalent. Regardless of how satisfied you are, in many cases, you're going to run into cognitive dissonance. This is the feeling of anxiety that consumers often have when they have to choose between fairly attractive alternatives. I could have gotten this one. Okay, I decided, but what about that other one? How would it have worked for me? And so marketers have to be aware that in many situations, consumers made the purchase, they might be okay, but they might also be worried about did they make the right choice or not. In a non-marketing situation, you ever run into somebody who just got engaged, and now they're wondering if they made the right choice or not? There's other attractive alternatives out there. Did they make the right choice? Nobody's raising their hand. Maybe that never happens to your people. It can occur, cognitive dissonance, regardless of the level of satisfaction. Could I have done better, price-wise, product-wise, attribute-wise, value-wise, if I'd chosen the other one? So marketers, well aware of this dissonance that occurs, have to guard against it. They can do this by reassuring consumers they made the right choice, minimizing the potential for product misuse, and using product literature and instructions that explain what's going on. And it leads to some stupid things. Perhaps you've actually seen this on some products you've bought, on the new iron that you bought. Congratulations on buying the world's best iron, let's say. Do not iron clothes while still on your body. Have you seen something as stupid as that? I've seen it. If people do that, they're going to be dissatisfied with the iron, yeah? Hilton Head, what do you need? What can I help you with? She's ignoring me. What do you need? What can I help you with? A previous life? Okay. You can ask him and he can ask me because we're buds. You can just ask me directly and cut out the middleman. You got it? No, I'm going to interrupt myself anyhow, so it's all good. We good? Okay. So, H.H. Gregg, I don't know if they're still around, but they were when this ad was created, and aware that people may not be happy with their purchase because they're always wondering about, could they have gotten it cheaper? Could they have done better?
I used to feel anxious and confused about buying a major appliance. Turns out she suffered from FOBO. Until I found H.H. Gregg, then my fear of not getting the best price, it just disappeared. That's what we do.
Get all the options you want during H.H. Gregg's Memorial Day Sale. Up to 35% off store-wide, plus zero interest until 2019. And free delivery, all with our low price guarantee. H.H. Gregg. Gregg's got it.
So ignoring the date on the thing, the point is the same, right? Hey, don't worry about it. We're going to guarantee you the best price. Relax your dissonance. You're okay. You made the right choice. So that's one way of helping people not to worry about it. Offering mechanisms for lodging complaints, a 1-800 phone number, a web form. You aren't going to have any problems with our product, but if you do, boom, here's what you do. Oh, all right, I guess I'm good. And when there are problems, don't aggravate your consumers. Be responsive to those issues, to those questions. So all of these things, first, as a marketer, you have to be aware that even when they're satisfied, they may be dissonant. Second of all, you have to think about what can you do to reduce the dissonance. Again, at this stage, I forget what stories I've already told. My wife and daughter used to shop at Beechwood Mall, and they'd go to the Coach store there to buy purses. Coach is not one of your discount places. It's expensive. And they would buy a bag. And then a week later, they'd get a beautifully handwritten note from a salesperson congratulating them on their good taste, on the value that they've gotten, and be sure to let the salesperson know if there's any questions. Reduce that dissonance. Reinforce the purchase. To the point of how much of this decision-making process is somebody going to go through, it depends on the level of involvement they have with the product category. So we talk about consumer involvement and decision making. In some cases, we have a situation that we call a routine problem solving purchase situation. You just don't really care all that much about the product. It's just not that important to you. So how much time are you going to spend making up your mind about it? Not a lot. If that's true, it's probably going to be a low-cost product. Where are you going to search for information? Probably in your head. And what alternative are you going to consider? Probably one. Any of you guys buy white bread at the grocery store? Yeah. White bread, yeah. Do you go through and there's lots of white bread to choose from on the shelf, yeah? Do you go carefully by each one and see what its brand is, how many slices it's got, its read its nutrition stuff? What do? You go buy the one that you bought last time, or maybe the first one on the shelf, but you don't worry about it very much. It's just not that important. So in general, routine problem solving are those things that we buy very often, we know well, just aren't that important to us. How's your product for your consumers? Although you can invent an alternative storyline. When I go to buy white bread, I have to make sure it's gluten-free or I get sick. For most of us, white bread is just white bread, right? If it's gluten-free, it might be really important to see which one you're getting. Limited problem solving. This is where the consumer involvement is moderate. You have some involvement in what you're purchasing. The time to buy that new microwave oven for your new apartment that you're moving into. You might want to look around a little bit. You don't want to buy the first one you see. Cost is low to moderate. Information search is mostly internal, but hey, I don't know, that's a new feature, that's a new size, that's a new style. Should I consider that versus the, what's the new way of cooking stuff? Air fryer, should I get a microwave or an air fryer? I don't know, that's new. And so you consider a few alternatives, and marketers have to be aware of that. And then we talk about something that's really important to you, your status, your personality, in this case an expensive sports car. Involvement in the product is high. Time to make that choice for many people is long. costs are fairly high. You want both internal and external search for information about the product you're considering buying, and you may consider a bunch of different alternatives. Marketers have to be aware of that. What information do you have on your website? What do your salespeople need to know? Where do you put your product, etc.? Yeah? So you have to understand your consumer and how they would treat your product as they go through this decision-making process. We also talk about psychological influences on consumers' purchase decisions. This is one of those factors we have in our model. And we talk about things that we have to understand about our consumers, such as motivation, personality, perception, learning, values, and lifestyle. And we're going to talk about each of these individually. So let's jump over to, oh, here we are. Here's motives, beliefs, attitudes, personality, and lifestyle, getting information, so exposure to stuff, and how all this works together. Ha! So, who's never heard of Maslow's hierarchy before? One, two, three. Oh, really? That many? They must have finally dropped it out of the curriculum, because most, in the old days, like 2 years ago, everybody heard about it 27 times. So let me talk about Maslow's hierarchy of motivation. A little bit of background, and then we'll get to my point. So in the years before Maslow, people had certainly known there was motivation driving people. And what they do is they would categorize the motives. There'd be social motives, there'd be personal motives, there'd be life motives. They just put them in different categories, in different boxes. Maslow's big contribution, and why for many of us we've seen him so often, is Maslow said they're not just different, they're hierarchical in nature. Before you start worrying about love and romance, you've got to make sure that you're safe and have your belly filled. Then you move up the ladder. These things aren't 100% fulfilled. These motives aren't 100% fulfilled, each one. But when it reaches an optimal level, given your situation, then you start thinking about the next level. And by the way, if you're in love and romance and suddenly you're starving, suddenly you dribble back down. Your attention goes back to eating again. So you move up and down these levels of motivation. So marketers buy into this notion of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And at the baseline, at the bottom of the pyramid, most basic, are things like food, water, shelter, oxygen. Most of us are not that concerned about oxygen, and fortunately, most of us aren't that concerned about shelter and water, some of us are. But certainly we're all concerned about food. So marketers say, hey, let's create an ad that would get somebody thinking about food.
It's endless shrimp at Red Lobster. Indulge in endless choices of your favorite shrimp, including new shrimp in a spicy Cajun butter sauce. It's endless shrimp, our best value of the year, now at Red Lobster.
If you happen to be into shrimp, that might make you think hunger. Could you argue that it also mentions value or price? You could, but that's not the theme here. The theme is endless yummy shrimp. Get people, you missed your lunch, now you're thinking about shrimp. Thinking about that, motivate them. Above that, once these are optimally filled, as good as they can be fulfilled for the moment, then you start thinking about safety needs, being free from harm, financial security. Again, none of us hopefully are worried about the bear coming to our cave and attacking us as they had in the old days. But we might be concerned about our financial security, for example. So we have ads that focus on this level of motivation.
Buying a home is one of the biggest decisions you'll ever make. So when you take that big step, let Woodmen of the World take it with you. We'll be there to provide life insurance protection and financial security for you and your family, so that you can turn your house into a home and your dreams into reality. Woodmen of the World, with you through life.
I have a house. I'm all set on the cave I'm living in the house I own. Now I want it to be secure for myself. I want my future to be secure. I want freedom from worry. Safety needs play out here. When these are taken care of, we would argue that you begin to think about social needs, friendship, belonging, love, and marketers certainly appeal to those motives as well.
A tear on a child's cheek. Tears of sadness. Tears of happiness. Tears of joy. Tears of love. Become a foster to adopt parent and be there to wipe a child's tear. Learn more about foster care and adoption with Summit County Children's Services by calling 330-379-1990.
Have love, share love, share your love with a child. You aren't doing that if you don't have a place to live, if you're worried about this stuff down here, but now you're thinking about that sort of thing. Once these are satisfied, we start thinking about things like your need for prestige, respect from others, your status in the community. Marketers play to those ideas as well.
Introducing, it's what Mercedes-Benz has been doing since 1886. Introducing the world to the first automobile. Introducing over 100,000 patented breakthroughs. Introducing innovations in performance, safety, design, and pure driving pleasure. This year, our 130th to be exact, we're introducing an unprecedented array of coupes, sedans, SUVs, convertibles, and roadsters. Introducing the youngest, most dynamic lineup in the world. All from the car company that needs no introduction. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.
And for someone like you, you deserve the best or nothing. Does it mention safety? Yeah, but that's not the theme here. The theme is it's an innovative set of products for somebody who's special like you. And finally, at the very top, and we don't all reach this level, is the idea of being the best you can be. All this other stuff is satisfied. Now you're focused on self-fulfillment, self-improvement, being the best that you can possibly be. Marketers play off on this idea as well.
I face one of the toughest challenges of my life right here. I couldn't swim. But I can still in my gym instructor today.
Don't quit. If you quit now, you'll always quit in life. Go for it.
So I jumped in, unsure, apprehensive, and scared out of my mind. But I came up a Marine.
That's not focused on you being safe and secure. That's focused on you being one of the few, the proud, being the best you can be, satisfying those self-fulfillment needs. So different products would appeal at different times to different target audiences based on these sorts of factors, yeah? How's it work for your target audience? How's it work for your product? Personality is another factor that influences consumers and their decision-making. Personality is a person's pattern of traits. It influences their life behaviors, how they behave in real life, and also influences their purchases. So I don't know, in your life, do you know people that are, just as they live their life, confident? Do you know people that are dependent on others? They always sort of need assistance. They need help. That are fearful, scared of everything. That are sexual in their everyday life. We argue that these same traits that drive their everyday personality are likely going to influence them in their style of consumer decision making. Are you consumers apprehensive, fearful, confident, sexy, outgoing, aggressive? I have a cousin from Los Angeles, and whenever you see her, it's always, "Oh, darling, how are you? Oh, kiss, kiss, kiss." Calm down. She's very flamboyant in her lifestyle, in her apparel, in her greeting you. It's her personality. What does the personality of your consumers tend to be? Certainly, consumers' purchase behavior, their decisions, are based on their perceptions of the world. What is perception? Perception is the process of receiving stimuli in the environment, organizing it in a way that makes sense, and giving meaning to those stimuli detected by one of our five senses. And our five senses, not the hard question of the day, are? Sight, again, taste, smell, sight, hearing, touch. Those are the senses, unless you have ESP, those are the senses that are going to help you organize the world around you, understand the world, and, of course, understand the marketing world as well. But the tricky point is, even though we all can be exposed to the same thing, it turns out that not everyone gets the same meaning from the same stimuli. What do you mean? I put the ad out. I know what it means. You knew what it meant. How come you don't get the same meaning? We have perceptual differences in our interpretation of the world. In part due to things called selective perception of stimuli around us, selective exposure to some stimuli and not other stimuli, selective comprehension, giving different meanings to arguably the same thing, selective retention, how do we remember things that we've thought about? And not a topic of as much interest recently as it has been in the past, the idea of subliminal perception, but we'll touch on it. So overall, selective perception is the process we use to determine, quote, what to perceive. Imagine that humans did not have selective perception. How many items are in a grocery store? 20,000? 50,000? I don't know. A whole bunch. Imagine you couldn't selectively perceive things as you walked into the store and just see the things that are important to you. You'd have to walk to the first item on the first shelf, look at it. Ah, applesauce by Mott's, 16-ounce jar. Then you have to sit it down and you have to look at the next thing over. What in the world is that thing? Ah, applesauce by Mott's. You set it to. How long would it take you to do your shopping? I don't know. A year? Fortunately, that's not what happens. I wasn't interested in applesauce. I was going to get white bread. Zoom, past the applesauce. I can't imagine what it would be like to operate if you didn't have selective perception. But different people select their environmental factors differently. So due to this selective process, we may omit items in our environment, just not pay attention to them. We may add to what is in our environment because of our needs, or even change what we see or feel or hear, which makes it hard to communicate with people on the topic of marketing stuff. Now, selective perception doesn't happen all at once. It occurs in various stages, including selective exposure to media messages, selective comprehension, understanding what we're getting in contact with, and selective retention of the information that we process. Let's run a little experiment. If you've already seen this one, don't yell out the answer. It takes the fun out of it. If you haven't seen it, it's a study. It's an experiment on differences in perception between men and women. How many of you guys believe there might be differences in perception between men and women? Everybody. Let's see if that holds to be true here or not. Okay? So here we go. If you know it, if you've seen it, don't yell it out. You spoil the fun for everybody else.
This is an awareness test. How many passes does the team in white make?
Go!
Okay, you able to see it okay, more or less? Ladies, how many passes were made? 13? 13? Higher than 13? Lower than 13? Everyone thinks it's exactly 13. Great. Gentlemen, how many passes were made? 14? 13? How many guys think 13? How many guys think 14? Okay. That actually isn't the study at all. The answer, I think, is 13, but it's not important. You'll see why in a minute. How many people have seen this before and already know what's happening? Oh, well, an awful lot of us. All right, for those that don't know, here we go.
The answer is 13. But did you see the moonwalking bear?
So, to make this make sense, do you know what a bear is? Bear, the animal? And do you know what moonwalking is, right? Because if you don't know those things, you can't answer. Okay, how many of you that don't know what's going on already, how many of you saw a moonwalking bear? Of those who don't know what's going on already, how many of you didn't see a moonwalking bear? Okay, I'm going to make a point here presently, but I'm going to show you the same thing. I'm not goofing with you. We aren't adding anything. So here we go with the same image, and eventually I'm getting to a point.
Go!
Okay, so who still didn't see the moonwalking bear, which happens sometimes? Anybody still not seeing it? Was it there? Well, you have to trust me, it was there, right? It's there! What do you mean you didn't see it? It's right there. Why didn't you see it? Yeah.
I was focused on getting the right number.
You were focusing on getting the right number of count. Human beings don't have the ability to perceive everything in their environment all at once. They have to select out some things to focus on and therefore ignore other things in the environment. Which is, of course, important for marketers to know, and sometimes do. I want you to focus on this thing, object, brand, attribute, characteristic, store, and not on these over here. It's easy to miss something you're not looking for. Now, this is very nice because it's actually done, this whole thing is a promotion, public service promotion, about cyclists. So it wraps up with. So, look out for cyclists, yeah? But it makes the point very nicely that we perceive our environment selectively. Other sorts of perceptual exercises, and it always stuns me because I never really, when I first did this, did not think it would work. Because for me, these answers are perfectly clear. There's no doubt. How many of you see this as white and gold? Look around for a second. How many of you see this as blue and black? What the F? What is wrong with you people? That is white and gold. No, it's not. This is stunning news. And I did not think it would work because I was convinced I know what it is. It's white and gold. Yeah.
You want to know something funny? I saw that as black and blue until I read the words white and gold, and then I saw it as white as gold.
Interesting. That's interesting. So what does that mean? We are all observing the it's not like half of us are seeing one and half of us are seeing the other. While observing the same stimuli, half of us fully think it's white and gold. Half of us think it's blue and black. People do not perceive things in the same way. It's crazy. But in marketing, I can't harp on this enough. Showing someone a stimuli, you have to know what they're going to see. I'm telling you, sir, you're wrong. It's white and gold.
So nope. Like
the, yes, it's
so
like.
Where do you see the white part at? Where do you see the gold part?
Look at the top of the dress. To me, that's gold.
Okay.
That neck piece. Uh-huh. And right under that is white. See? Keep it in mind. What are you consumers seeing? I also did not think this one would work. Let's see if we can get it working. Because it's audio. You guys may have heard of this before. See what you
Laurel.
Hear. Start over.
Laurel. 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 Laurel.
Okay. Laurel. So it keeps going over. I see. So again, for me, it's perfectly clear. When I first said this to my wife at home, I said, I gotta do this with you. Because to me, it's perfectly clear what they're saying. There's not a doubt in my mind. They're saying Laurel. And it was perfectly clear to me. And she said, no, they're not. They're saying Yanny. They are not. They're saying Laurel. I thought she was jerking me around. How many of you people here, Yanny? Look around. How many of you here in Laurel? Look around. People do not perceive the same stimuli in the same ways. There are technical explanations for what occurs there. That's not my point, the technical explanation. The point is to know what happens. You create a message as a marketer, business. You put it out to the world. You see what it is. They're saying Laurel. And, oh, you two can't, you two don't agree? And it, they don't get out of it what you expect, what you think you're getting. Perception of your consumers can be quite different from what you know to be true. And what's important is what's true in their mind, right? Not what you know to be true. Selective exposure. From the variety of communications that are out there in the world, including marketing communications, people choose to expose themselves to only some of these communications. How many of you guys listen to rock and roll? How many of you guys never listen to rock and roll? How many of you guys listen to country? How many of you guys never listen to country? How many of you guys listen to symphony? How many of you guys never listen to symphony? I better know which of these channels of communication my consumers go to, what their media choice preference is, or when I get that message out there, they aren't going to hear it. Now, within the channel, they also choose to ignore some messages. They don't pay attention to everything. So consumers tend to view commercials or ads that reaffirm their pre-existing ideas, attitudes, and it bolsters their image of themselves and what they know. One reason why it's so hard in our current political environment to get the divisiveness closer together is because of this factor. Republicans are in their bubble. They hear what they listen to. They ignore, don't listen to, don't tune in and see as false the other messages. Democrats are in their bubble. They're seeing what they know to be true. They're reinforcing what they know to be true. And they're not hearing the message of the Republicans. It's coming to bite us in an interesting way in our democracy. People tend to listen to stuff that reaffirm their existing ideas. That can be about political parties. It can be about people. You ever know someone in your personal life that's going out with a guy or a gal that just isn't right for them? It's not a good thing. And maybe you've tried to mention it to them. They're not having any part of it. They're getting messages that reinforce their existing attitude about the person and themselves. They're ignoring everything else. Can happen with products too, with brands too, with stores too. How do you break through barriers to perception as a marketer? Well, we can use a variety of techniques. For example, maybe nobody wants to talk about their nail-biting habit. If you saw somebody walking down the street with that big bag, it might get your attention as a anti-nail biter for that Stop and Grow brand. In addition, for example, people rarely read your web page word for word. Wait a second, I put all that work into it. I have all my value, all my features, all my benefits, why it's better than competition, my pricing strategy, my survey, it's all there. People aren't going to read word for word. Instead, they scan the page, picking out individual words and sentences. In research on how people read websites, it was found that 79% of their test users always scanned any new page they came across. Only 16% read it word by word. I'm stunned that their research said 16% of the population that they tested read web pages word for word. But I guarantee you that most of your consumers, in most situations, aren't going to read all of that carefully crafted message you put on your website. Selective perception processes. Selective comprehension. Comprehension involves interpreting different information that's out there so it's consistent with your beliefs and attitudes. People don't like change. They don't like to hear things that don't match what they already know. It was once reported in a study that 80% of non-smokers believe that there's a link between smoking and lung cancer. They believe that's proven. Non-smokers believe it. Only 52% of heavy smokers believe there is such a link. Obviously, if I'm a heavy smoker, I don't really want to believe that it's linked to lung cancer. My aunt Matilda lived 102 and smoked 3 packs a day and drank bourbon too. Don't tell me it's going to lead to lung cancer. Okay. People believe stuff that's consistent with their own attitudes. So, how many of you guys believe it's pretty easy for me to fool you with perceptual things? Believe it? How many people think, nah, you're attuned to it, you know what I'm doing, I'm talking about perception, it's not going to be that easy to fool you? Not that easy. How many people are awake? Oh, that's, no one's awake. Are you guys awake? I'm going to show you 3 images that have a phrase. I think you'll all know these 3 phrases, although I never know what you all will know, but I think you'll know these phrases. I'm going to leave it up long enough for you to see them, and then I'm going to ask you what I'm doing. Always an interesting question. What is he doing? All right, here we go. Ready? 3 phrases. I'm going to ask you to repeat them in a second, so try to get all 3. Enough time. You can see him okay. All right, so what's one of the phrases? You couldn't see the phrases, or you're not going to play with me? Once in a lifetime. What else? Paris in the spring. A bird in the hand, right? Of course, you know they're all wrong. We know that. Who knows they're wrong? Okay? Who thinks they're right? Who's not going to play the game at all? All right. Why are they wrong? Who said bird in the hand? You said bird in the hand. All right. I'm going to show it to you again. And let me see. Let's judge if that's what it says. Okay? You ready? Here we go. Perceptual tricks. Can you read it? What's it say?
Bird in the hand.
See, it still says bird in the hand. I'm telling you, I'm messing with you. I'm telling you there's a perceptual trick here. She's attuned to it because she's awake and listening. And what does she still see? Bird in the hand. Let me try it one more time. Ready? Bird in the hand. We tend to see what we expect to see. Who knows what's going on? Tell her what it says.
Bird in the hand.
And she goes, what? It does say bird in the hand. Likewise, once in a lifetime, and Paris in the spring. Why don't we get it on the first blush? We know the phrase. We expect it to be Paris in the spring. Even on study, we still see it as Paris in the spring. It's what we expect to see. We see what we expect to see. We ignore other stuff that we don't expect to see in real life. Let's pretend that it was important to me as a communicator to make sure, without telling them, that there were those double words there. What could I do? What could I do to make sure that all of us perceived it correctly? I could underline one of the does or both of the does, right? I could bold it. I could italicize it. I could put it in a different color. I think, although can't guarantee, that most people would then pick up on this difference in perception. Okay. Many of us have seen that one before. Let's see if we've seen this one before or not. I'm fooling you again. How many people think I can fool you this time? How many people are convinced I'm not going to fool you because you're on to me by now? Okay. I'm going to stand back here with the scoffers. Let's see if they get it. All right. Here we go. Yeah, we can't click to like, but you guys got it? Got the problem? You got it? Do you have the problem? You just told me I couldn't fool you. I'm telling you I'm messing with perception. You don't see the issue. Tell them the issue. There's 2 thes. Can you find the mistake? He's convinced I'm not going to fool him. He knows what's going on. I just gave an example, 2 words together. He's looking at the numbers because that's what you expect it to be, where you expect the problem to be, right? Consumers' expectations strongly influence their perceptions. To state the obvious, then, you need to study your consumers against your communication, your messages, your advertisements, your videos, to make sure that you know how they're going to react, because it's not obvious how people will react. Selective retention is the idea that people remember more often, more accurately, messages that are favorable to their self-image than they do messages that are unfavorable. So in most cases, once you get through the selective perception, the exposure issue, and get your message in front of it, usually it works better for you to have a positive message for the consumer, something that matches their self-interest. See, people tend to remember the good, or by the way, funny, humorous things, and forget the bad. Selective retention often reinforces your self-image. Marketers then need to be aware that people don't necessarily retain what they previously saw, thought, had in their head. So you need to find a way to help consumers to retain their message. In this case, you run a bunch of ads for Oral-B toothbrushes. In your ads, your videos, your print ads, you've used that image. And now in the store, you put up an end cap display that reinforces, oh yeah, I wanted to try one of those Oral-B things that I heard about before. Boom, that's my reminder. That helps you retain it and act on it. How many of you guys have heard of subliminal perception? Heard of it? What's your perception of subliminal perception? What do you think it is? Yes, sir. Things that you pick up on that you don't realize you pick up on, maybe it's got a little subtler thing to that than that.
Things you don't consciously perceive, like they kind of retain in the back of your mind.
So you're sort of on the same path as he is, but a true subliminal perception is the idea that I can put out a audio that's so low you can't hear it, but it's good enough that will influence you. I can put out a video and flash something on the screen so fast that you don't consciously perceive it, but it will still influence you. This was an old idea that was promoted. It turns out to be false news. Supposedly, a long time ago, some movie theater flashed on the screen very quickly, buy Coke, or drink Coke, buy popcorn. Supposedly, sales went up. It was all baloney. But that got instilled in many people's minds that marketers would do subliminal perception. Doesn't work very well as a concept. If it's low enough that I don't hear it, I mean that you don't hear it, you hear things pretty well. It's got no chance of me hearing it. It's going to be way too low, right? Plus, there's no evidence. What's the explanation for why hearing drink Coke would make you go drink Coke? Just doesn't make sense. A lot of time was spent on this over time, and nobody in marketing is doing subliminal perception, and I think it's illegal anyhow. However, what this gets confused with is the idea of what's sometimes called hidden messages. This author is wrong. What I'm going to show you in a second is not subliminal. It's hidden. I don't think marketers do a lot of it, but let's take a look at the hidden message. Anybody see the... Yes, ma'am. I'm only there. See, G is G, subliminal perception, G? That's okay. So, this is just an example under G. So, anybody who maybe hasn't already read the book and know this answer, anybody see the thing here that's hidden? That's going to make you buy the product? All right, I'm going to show it to you. Now, why I say it's hidden is subliminal means you can't see it. It's below your perceptual level. Here we go. Can you see it now, or is it still too subtle? You can see it? Okay. Wait, hold it. Has it suddenly gone away? You can't see it anymore?
Can I say it?
Can you see it?
Or I see a picture of a woman behind the flowers.
You went ahead of me. But how about this one?
Oh, is it a bean or something?
Oh, interesting. What are people seeing that you see it now. Okay, cool. So the point is, once I show it to you, sex. Once I show it to you, I presume it doesn't disappear. It's no longer subliminal. Once you see it, you see it. These guys argue that sort of message is hidden, but still will come through to you and influence you. What? I don't know about that. But anyhow, it's certainly not subliminal in the sense that it's there. You can see it. Indeed, you jumped one ahead of me. Good job. There's a woman there, too. How many people had previously seen the woman? How many people did not see the woman until just now? Okay? Wait a second. Here we go. Oh, I don't see her anymore. She's gone. No, she's still there. Hidden messages. I don't have any convincing reason that seeing the word sex and the hidden woman would make you buy this book. How about a good review? I just doesn't work for me. I just don't believe it's an important part of marketing, but they talk about it. So consumers perceive marketing stimuli selectively. Why? Because each consumer, each individual, is unique in their combinations of needs, wants, desires, attitudes, past experiences, personal characteristics. And so, identical advertisements or packages or products may be seen, as we've just seen, very differently by your consumers. You better understand this and do some research on your stuff before you put it out, because you don't really know how people are going to perceive it. Another element that influences consumer decision-making is how risky is it? So perceptions of the riskiness of the purchase are called, well, perceived risk. Obviously, if something is going to cost you a year's salary, you're going to spend more time thinking about it than if you're thinking about a candy bar at the machine out there. What is, relative to your consumer's income, how financially risky is this product? When I go to buy a car, man, I'm not looking online, clicking and buying a car. I'm sorry. I'm going to go look at the car, ride in the car, feel the car, taste the car, etc., smell the car, and then try another one. There are people for whom they just click, they bought a car. Different audiences, different views of the world. Physical risk, I forget, do we have any export people here, exports? Yeah, what do you do? Yep, see, I got to get a mic for everybody in the room. So say again, what do you do? Gymnastics, okay, so I don't know what equipment, I guess you don't buy your own bar, do you? So what equipment do you use? Shoes?
Grips,
okay, do you want the cheapest grip you can get? No, it's important, the grip's really important. Why? Because if it doesn't work, I get broken, I get hurt. So as you go to look at grips, I presume you look around and consider what's the physical risk. Here's one that's really cheap and it almost worked in China. Would you like it? No, it's a really good price. No, thanks. Physical risk. How physically risky is your product? Performance risk. I can get you a really good set of brakes inexpensively for your car. I'm sure they work fine. No. If they fail, my car's going to have a wreck. No, thanks. Performance risk. Psychosocial risk. Psychological and social factors. How will others judge you if you make this purchase? I tell you a true story. My wife, despite her Nordstrom ways, for a long time was bugging me, well, I'm going to point to you and me, that's a coincidence, to get my ear pierced. Me. I don't know. What do you suppose my colleagues in the Department of Marketing, given who I am, would say if I showed up one day with a pierced ear? I'm afraid there's a little psychological social risk for me in making that decision. So should you get a mohawk, dye your hair green, get a tattoo, whatever?
Vote yes.
No thanks. So psychosocial risk can be an important factor as consumers decide about your particular product. Yeah? Marketers have to understand their consumers' perception of risk and address them appropriately for the target audience. And sorry, the vote is not going to get me to pierce my ear and wear a diamond. This is probably an older ad. I don't know if I think chemistry is still out there. There are others, certainly, brands out there. But this is them dealing with the perception of financial risk for their product.
I vow to never wear a flannel nightgown.
Can you just make that, I vow to never wear a nightgown?
I vow to never be a classic rock DJ.
I promise to embrace your human beatbox.
Isn't it time you found great chemistry with someone? At chemistry.com, we vow to help you find it. Take our personality test and get your first 5 chemistry-inspired matches free. Visit chemistry.com today.
Well, I don't know. It's at the time I put this together, it's $80 for 3 months, $40 for 1 month. I don't know. How about some free stuff? All right, maybe I'll give it a try and see what happens. We reduce that financial. Fortunately for us, consumers can also learn stuff. And what I've learned is I can't keep you much past this minute of the hour, so I'm going to let you go. This will be the end of the material for mini test 4, and I'll post the exact information later today. Have a good weekend. See you next time.